So before we start, I want to set a mood a little bit. So I'm going to have them play a little bit of music in behind me. We believe here at Friend Church that how we live our lives and how our relationship functions and how healthy we are on the inside, not even in the kind of the normal spiritual sense, but in the sense of how we live our lives is profoundly spiritual. So if you're new to Friend Church and you've kind of never been to a Friend Church service before, this is the beginning, and you come from another church, today's going to feel a little bit weird because it's going to seem like I'm not talking about spirituality at all. But for us, this stuff is profoundly spiritual. And I hope you see it as we go along. So just, I want a warning. If you're new to Friend Church and you come from a traditional church, it's not going to feel very spiritual, but I think it is. So today I want to start with an exercise I did recently. It's in a book I was reading, and it goes something like this. Hey, Joe, can you just turn it down a little bit for me? So just everyone take a deep breath. Joe, bring it down a little bit further for me. Everyone take another deep breath. Now close your eyes, and I want you to imagine something for me. You're suddenly in an unfamiliar dark place. You're unsure and scared and aware that you're very much alone. You want to call out for someone to come. Who is the person who responds to you? Imagine his or her face in your mind. Did you call? Did you not call? Perhaps you convince yourself that this is a bad idea, even a sign of weakness or an opening that will lead to hurt and disappointment. Perhaps you decide it's not good to rely on another person and you must take care of your distress all on your own. So you hunker down in the dark. Maybe you called, but it was very quiet and hesitant. Then you went and hid in the dark corner. How does your body feel as you imagine this scene? Is it tight? Numb? Sore? Agitated? Relaxed? Was it hard for you to imagine this? What emotions came up for you? Sadness? Joy? Anger? Even anxiety? Okay, take another deep breath. And open your eyes. Were you surprised at who showed up in your mind? Who you wanted to show up? Was there only one person, or was there a lot of people who showed up? Did you call out for help? Were you quiet? Now just hold that image in your mind for a little while, okay? It's the first Sunday of December, and we're all preparing ourselves for the Christmas season, right? Which means work Christmas parties, friends, family gatherings, kids' Christmas concerts, and a million other things that I can't even name right now. And between all the events you have to go to, there's the shopping for gifts, right? For your partners, your kids, your parents, your siblings' partners, your siblings' partners' kids from another marriage. Right? It just gets, what do you buy those people? Like, are we related? How does this work? And then there's friends, bosses, teachers. It's just, it's a crazy time. In our family growing up, all of our family lived in a town 2 hours away. So we rarely had people at our house. But every once in a while, Christmas would be at our house. And because we were from a rather traditional family, my dad would work and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She kind of worked a little bit, but mainly stayed home. And so she would cook. But the other problem was my dad thought cooking was you cut up wieners, you put them in a pan with some butter, and then you put some sugar in there. And that's what we'd have for the weekend because dad was cooking, right? So dad, the woman who gave birth to me would not let that be served to her guests. And so she'd be in the kitchen for hours, preparing, you know, slaving away. And she'd usually make just like a killer Christmas dinner, like fantastic. But that's not really what this story's about. Because I have a distinct memory of her sitting in this little brown chair we'd have after. She'd kind of sit just like she had no bones left in her body, just like, oh. And her head would be back, and she'd have a cup of tea in her hand.
feel like, oh, now I can relax. And the funny thing is, she wouldn't say it after all the cooking's done. She wouldn't say it after all the dishes have been cleaned up and, you know, everyone's just sitting around visiting at the end, but there's not really any work to do. That's not when she'd say it. She'd say it when everyone had left. She was all on her own. Now I can relax. Some of you know that feeling. It's maybe not hosting 20 people at a family gathering, but maybe you left a family gathering, you're just like driving home going, oh, sweet mother, I can't wait to be home. I'm going to close, turn off all the lights, pour myself a big glass of wine, and just like no talk to no one for 2 weeks. You got your kids, you know, Christmas play. One song in, and you're already checking the time. I could be home, yeah. Christmas party, you're sitting in the corner trying to pretend that you're not there, wishing you were home, you know, being able to do whatever you do. It's because the interactions with people can drain us. For my mom, it was people being around. It just emptied her somehow. And I think we're all a little like that. People have the potential to drain. Because some of us, like my mom, we feel drained by people. Isn't that awesome? Walk through the door? No. How many of us have been to a thing where you pull up into the parking lot and you just want to like rack the seats back, turn the music on, and just blow that whole event off? It's interesting though. Some of us are drained by people. Even people we love. Those were his kids, his wife. You know, you feel some of this when you come home one evening and there's a note that says, hey, you're not going to be home tonight. And you're like, yes! And then you instantly feel guilty for being so excited that your loved ones aren't home. So you're like, yes. But inside, you feel like, oh, now I can recharge. And now some of you are going, man, I get that. And some of you are looking at me going, I understand all the words that you're using, but they make no sense whatsoever. How could people drain you? Don't worry, Jeff's going to talk to you guys next week. Sorry, Jeff. I didn't even mean that joke. They just went there. So if you're listening to the podcast, that wasn't me. And even if you don't know what I'm talking about, even if you haven't felt that feeling, you know somebody. Someone in your family or your life who's a hermit, or at least you call them a hermit. They sit alone at Christmas parties. They'd rather be doing anything than a family gathering. That's the ones you're like, hey, you coming a month, you know, ahead of time? They don't respond till like 4 hours before. Yeah, I guess I'm coming. Huh. They bring the bucket of chicken. You might be married to one, parenting one, sibling to one, friend to one, work with one. And everything you've ever tried to do to engage them, you're like, hey, how's it going? You know, they're on the side of the Christmas party, and you're over there like, hey, come on in, everybody. And then you start making fun of them, and they're like, you're like, why are they shrinking away? I don't even understand. Because everything we do to try and to get them into the group, let's be honest, for those of us who are feeling this way, it's pretty darn annoying, isn't it? You know that line? Why don't you ever talk to me? Come join the group. You need to be alone again? Like, didn't you just need some alone time last week? You're like, it's not helping. But what's also not helping is when we say, hey, I need some time alone, the pain in our partner's eyes. When our kids hurt themselves, they don't come to us. They go to somebody else because we're always needing alone time and quiet time. When we get passed over for promotions and things at work because everybody else is hanging out and connected and friends, but we're the ones sitting off in the corner with our doors closed and our offices getting work done.
In fact, some of the things that we're craving in life, we're missing out on because we need to recharge all the time, away from people. Why? And some of you are jumping out with, yeah, but I'm an introvert. Well, I'm actually a 98th percentile introvert. That means 2% of you might be more introverted than I am. The thing is, introverts can recharge in small groups and one-on-one. If you're an introvert, you don't need time alone. You just need time in a smaller group. If you want time alone, that's something different. Sometimes we don't even want to be alone. Like, I want to be in the house in my room, but I don't want you to be in the same room as me. You can be in the same, like, in the house with me, that feels nice, but, like, not in my room. And don't yell my name across the house. That's just annoying. Because I'm in the middle of something, right? I'm recharging, and then you yell, and now Why do we crave alone time? I spent the last 2 years studying this stuff. And I'd love to give you the entire history of the movement. You know I would love that because I'm geeky like that. And yes, I've studied every part of this. My coach was like, can you cut that back a little bit? But they need to know every person in the entire history of this movement, don't they? The one I want you to talk about today is Mary Ainsworth. And she created what's called the Strange Situation Experiment. And it goes like this. Take a baby, 1 year old. You know when they're like, when mom leaves, they lose their stuff? You take a kid like that, you put him in a room, a bunch of toys and the mom, and you play together till the kid's all like, this is great, I'm loving life. Then you tap on the window, so you have a bunch of people observing and cameras shooting into this room. You make the mom leave. What happens to a 1 year old when mom leaves the room? I think the technical word is the child feels stress. You know? So when the baby gets stressed out, they give it a couple minutes. They're not trying to freak the kid out totally. They're just trying to get the kid upset. So they get the baby stressed out, and then they reunite the mother and the child and see what happens. Take a look. So why do I show you about a weird experiment with some crazy guy who likes to freak kids out? It's interesting. You saw that? First one, secure attachment. Mom comes back in, the kid's just like, within minutes, calm, ready to play, having a great time. Second kid, same scenario. You see the kid's body language? Just looked kind of like dead, like just avoidant. The mom's there to, you know, the line he says at the end, the whole thing that caused him distress was his mom leaving. Now his mom comes back, everything should be good again, right? How does he react? And I don't just show you this to show creepy 70 guys in turtlenecks with jackets on doing weird experiments on kids. A number of years later, another two people were doing some research on adults. And here's what they found. We are still acting out our lives in the same way. Those little kids inside of us that reacted really obviously in the experiment, we're still doing that in our primary relationships. Not with everybody, but with the relationships that mean something. Isn't that insane? When somebody gets hurt or hurts you, if you're secure, when they come back and apologize, the repair works. You reconnect, you feel good. That's actually how our brains are designed to work. We're designed to let somebody else calm us down. But if you're avoidant in your relational attachment, which I have to say, I have been most of my life. When something like this happens, when somebody hurts you and you come back in, what do? I need time away. I need you by myself. We're living out the same stuff as adults. We do it all over the place. Okay, I gotta make a joke. We're all too serious here. How many of you, if you're fully honest, no, I'm gonna make you raise your hands, but I'd really love to make you raise your hands. How many of you are guilty of spending a little more time in the bathroom than you need to do your business? Because it's nice and quiet in there. No one bugs you.
Society says, close the door when you're in the bathroom. You're like, absolutely. 20 minutes later, feeling better. Right? So who cares? Why can't we just be alone? Why can't we have quality time in the bathroom when we need to? And the thing is, this isn't working well for us. We're designed to be like that first baby, not the second baby. The second baby, that's how we've wired or rewired our brains to deal with something. And here's how I know. Think back. When you were a teenager, how much time, alone time, did you need? Now fast forward to today. Is it increasing or decreasing? Because what used to be a half an hour in the evening that I would need became an hour, and then 2 hours, and then part of the weekend. Pretty soon, half my week, you know, it's like you're at work by 4 o'clock. You're like, can't wait to get home and be by myself. And you think if we've been doing this our whole lives, we get better at it, right? It's like a sport. As you do it better, you become more and more efficient at it. So really the time should lessen, right? We need less time to recharge. But everyone I talk to, and myself included, it's getting worse. Kids wanting help frustrates us more than it ever has before. I feel like I showed you that. We did that already. Why do you keep calling me? Friends reaching out saying, hey, let's get together for coffee. Like, don't you understand how much stress I have? Like, seriously. Why can't you just give me some alone time? You can feel the energy of it, can't you? Now, remember how I started this message? I had you imagine being alone in a dark place. Then I asked you to think about a person who you want to respond to you. Did you notice the face come up? Were you a bit surprised by the face that came up? I've done this with many people, and no one has ever said to me, I got no face in my mind. When we get underneath the conscious brain and all of our coping strategies and all the things we've told ourselves that accept the brain message, we get to down to what they call the lizard brain or the fast brain or our unconscious brain. That one has an idea, right? No, someone's there. And we might be scared of them. We might be all sorts of things. But someone shows up. So what does that mean? We think we need alone time. And yet when I put you in this scenario that kind of bypasses your conscious mind, a face comes up of someone who would take care of you. For those of you who are not avoidant in your relationship style, I know this doesn't make sense to you. A few of you are looking at me kind of like with this like, yeah, I don't get it, Clausen. But I want you to see what's going on inside of our minds so you can understand. Because there's somebody in your life who's avoidant, just statistically, unless you're a hermit, in which case you're the avoidant person. You're just in denial. Why would someone's face show up if you think the only way you can recharge is being by yourself? A number of years ago, I was sitting up on stage here talking to an attachment specialist. Her name was Alicia Hinger. Do you guys remember that interview? I don't remember you guys at all because there was so much she was saying that was blowing my mind that I was just like, it was like my brain shut off. But I remember her at one point saying this thing. I can't remember how the question happened. I just remember her line. She said, avoidant people normalize neglect. We believe that no one cares about us. No one cares about what we need, about what's important to us. Here's the hard part. If we're with other people, we always think it's going to be about that person. It's never going to be about us. And we just think that's normal. And so when we're tired and stressed, what do you think we're going to do? We're going to be by ourselves. Because we believe that people will suck us dry. It's like if I have a tank of energy, if I walk into a room, everyone gets to like stab a hole in the bottom and it just drains. And I have like 10 minutes of energy until it's gone. And even though that feels true, we can feel it sucking the life out of us, can't we? Needing more and more time by ourselves. And even worse,
We can look at the people's eyes who we want to have time away from, and we see the hurt there. We see the pain we're causing. And we're doing exactly to them what we're scared of people doing to us. Because me being off in my room by myself is neglecting everybody in my life. We're wired to calm down together. And when they reach out to me with that, I'm not there. Because I'm recharging. I had this day with my counselor. We were talking through how to be skillful in relationships. And a person I love deeply, we were talking about standing in front of them, and they were just kind of losing it. And I didn't know what to do. I knew what I'd done was wrong. I was like, Dana, what do I do? She said, what did you do? So I did what any person would do. I gave him space. I laughed. Person's sobbing. I gave them alone time, right? Because that's what everyone needs, isn't it? All the islands are going. We let them calm themselves down, right? Give them space, because that's what we want, or at least that's what we think we want. And I remember her saying, Vince, you can just tell she's like, you're an idiot. Vince, next time you just hug that person you don't let go. And it sounds so simple. But at the time I was like, I don't even, are you messing with me? Like, seriously, are you punking me? Because, like, if you're messing with me right now, this is not funny. Because I'm really vulnerable right now, and I don't know what to do. And she said, no, that's exactly what you do. This idea of giving them space, we're not wired for that. And that's when I realized that I was projecting my way of coping with the world onto everybody around me. It was killing them. I was trying to force them to cope with the world the way I cope with the world. I think of it like this. My way of coping with the world is like running a marathon without shoes. You might be able to do it. You might get to the end. But you are beaten and bloodied and your feet do not feel good. And I realized I was forcing the people I love to do the same thing. To fend for themselves. When your kids need a hug, instead of being there to hug them, you teach them to calm themselves down. When your partner needs you to show up and love them, you're too busy having quiet time, having alone time, recharging. And this is the part where I realize it just gets bigger, because Jesus' words at that time, I remember haunting me. Love your neighbor. And I've been avoiding my neighbor. We've been scared of our neighbors. We think our neighbors are our enemies because they suck us dry. So instead of texting our friend when we need to, we give ourselves an excuse to stay home and take care of ourselves. And we're forcing the rest of the world to start interacting with us like avoidant people, because we're never around. And I'd love to say the Bible has this great solution. You know, 1 Vincent 4, verse 3 says. It doesn't. Attachment theory is like 15 years old, maybe, as it applies to adults. But you know what? I think how we interact with this has profound influences in all parts of our lives. Because I think we can do this better. For us avoidant people out there, I think we can learn to interact with the world in a different way. And I think we can start to treat the people around us with the love that they need. that helps them calm down, that helps them feel supported and loved and taken care of without feeling like we're sucked dry. I think it's possible. So let me say a couple things to the people who are relationally avoidant. We are not broken. You need time by yourself. That's okay. Don't feel shame. That's how your brain's wired right now. And to say, stop it, it's impossible. I don't think we have neuroplasticity so we can change it. But for now, just be aware of it. Don't feel ashamed about it. We're not broken. Remember when my counselor first said that, I was like, see? Nothing wrong with me. She's like, well, that's really not what I was talking about. But at the same time I say we're not broken, I want to push us a little bit because I think we need it. Avoidant attachment comes from that deep message that says, no one will ever care about what I need. But is that true? Or is that just how we've chosen to see the world? Because before we were even mentally developed enough to create that whole scenario, we were doing it. This exists way below thoughts. But that feeling of no one cares about me, no one's going to take care of me, it's never going to be about me. That's what I want to get at. So I want to ask yourself, when you're feeling upset, when you're feeling frustrated, when your relationship's feeling like they're going in the toilet, ask yourself, am I feeling neglected? Do I feel like the people who care most about me actually care most about me? Chances are, if you're anything like me, like 90% of the time, the answer is yes, I do feel neglected. And then I want you to do something different. Normally, this part, we go, since I feel neglected, I need quiet time, I need to be alone, I need to recharge. Ask yourself this second question. Am I being neglected in this moment? Does the person on driving... let's try that again. Is the person driving slow and Deerfoot actively trying to neglect me, who's driving behind them and late for work? Is that what's going on? Or maybe they just freaked out. Maybe their car's got a flat. I don't know. Maybe there's a million things. Is your partner who did not make the bed in the morning for you, when you clearly have said to them a million times that it matters, are they doing that deliberately to make you angry? To say, I don't give a rat's ass about you and the things that you like. Is that what they're thinking in that moment? Or are they just late for work and they forgot because it just slipped their mind because it's not as important to them as it's to you? Are they actively neglecting you? Or is that hurt that started off when we were 1 year old coming into that moment and taking over? Jeff called them deep wounds a couple weeks ago. Are you letting the deep wounds inside of you run the show? Because if you are, you're going to need alone time every time. But if there's something inside of you that can go, am I being neglected in this moment? There's a chance you can say, actually, no, I'm not. And then instead of leaving the party early, instead of blowing off the family gathering because you're too exhausted, instead of never texting your friends because you got too much on the go and you're too stressed out, you can start engaging in the world again, loving your neighbor and not being worn out by it. That's just a mind trip, isn't it? Now, for those of you who are not relationally avoidant but have to deal with people like me, the ones thinking either, what in the world is Clausen talking about? Or I'm really hoping you're thinking right now, I have those people in my life. How can I help them? Take a look. I love that clip. So for those of you who are not relationally avoidant but dealing with people like me, please be kind with this knowledge. You now know our deep down hurts, and you can really hurt us with it. This is not a time for shame or pointing it out or guilt. This is not a time to use this knowledge to punish. This is a time for compassion. Second, we are not broken. You don't need to fix us. Please stop trying. It's probably going to drive us nuts and pretty much going to make us want more alone time. Sure, we have some problems. We understand that. But an intervention is not what we need. We truly do need time alone. I know it sucks. And as we do more and more with this deep work, we'll need less time alone. But right now, we do need time alone. It's how our brains are wired. And the more you understand that, and the more you're okay with that, the healthier we will be. And in fact, if you want to make an avoidant person in your life loved like they've never felt loved before, do what that person did. Text your partner and say, hey, I'm going to go out with some friends tonight. You have the house to yourself. They will just be like, ah. They will feel loved. Because if you can give them what they need before they have to go through all the shame and the guilt and the pain of asking for it, that's like triple word score in Scrabble land. It feels amazing. So if you have someone in your life who's asking for time away, do the counterintuitive thing. Say, hey, get lost. We'll be back in a couple hours. They will feel amazing. Final thing. This is another magical nugget from my counselor. If you have someone in your life who's avoidant, they seem like they want to be left alone, right? But now after listening to this, you know that that's not the issue. They're just scared to be sucked dry. They're scared it's going to be all about you. They're scared that no one's going to take care of them. So here's what you do. Be curious about them. If you have a 13-year-old who lives in his room nonstop and drinks energy drinks and plays video games, do not say, why do you play video games? Say, hey, what are you playing? Hey, what level are you on? Tell me about it. Oh, can I come watch? Suddenly you will get like a crash course in video game edit, chat etiquette. Like they will open up to you in a way that you've never understood because you're curious about what they love. Try it. Give people time before they ask for it and be curious. It will change a ton. For those of you who are feeling helpless, if you can learn avoidant attachment, you can unlearn it. There's hope. We've coined a new term. We're calling ourselves recovering avoidant people. For those of you who remember our series last year, we changed the name from island to avoidant. Here's why. All you islands were like, yes, I'm an island. That's awesome. Woo! I was like, it's not that good, people. I'm not saying you feel shame about it, but like this isn't the end of our entire, you know, relational trajectory. So we decided to change it a little bit. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of living my life feeling like no one cares about what I need. I'm tired of it. Because it's wrecking my life, and I think it's wrecking yours. It's keeping me from being with amazing people, experiencing amazing things, being the person I want to be in this world, loving my neighbor. It's keeping me from that. And I'm working on trying to change my attachment style, and I want to encourage you to the same thing. I still hold myself back from people all the time. You knew it. 5 years ago, people would come towards me with a hug. I'd be like this. Because if you put your foot out, they can't get close enough to get a hold of you. they can't reach unless they get really long arms. I had it down to a science, right? How many hugs did I miss? How many times did I let? Could have people have comforted me? How many times could I have comforted them? When they're reaching out for a hug, when they're needing someone to just know, I'm not alone, there's someone here who cares about me. How many times did I miss that because of my crap? I now realize that with some skill and some work, I can help. I still have to ask if it's hug time because I still haven't quite figured out when it's hug time and when it's not. Because in my brain, right, it's never hug time. That's the avoidant message. It's not hug time. They want to be alone. But I'm working on it, and it's making a major difference in my life and in the people around me. I want to encourage you all to be willing to see that message, am I being neglected? And ask yourself, is it true? If it's true, get out of there. But if it's not, be willing to do things differently. Are you open to it? As I do more and more of this work, and I'm not good at it, so
don't think I'm some guy. I'm like, I'm started way below all you people, and I'm just trying to catch up to where you guys are at. But as I measure the trajectory of when I first started working on this and where I am now, if I measure that and project that line into the future, I can imagine a Christmas full of family gatherings and Christmas parties and gatherings and event times that are actually recharging. Wouldn't it be amazing to finish this Christmas season energized? That's how our brains are wired. We just took a left turn someplace. Are you willing to challenge that? Have a great week, everyone. Let me end with this. May we be a people who love like we've never been able to before. And may this Christmas be the best Christmas yet. Merry Christmas, everybody.